John Hansen in for Steve Bertrand on the Wintrust Business Lunch on this rather gorgeous Monday afternoon here in Chicago. I hope it improves your mood today, whether you're at work or off today. But there's a new meter out for happiness we're going to get to in just a little bit. But I want everyone to text on in, 312-981-7200. I got an informal poll today. It's really simple. Are you happy at work or not? Don't worry, we won't tell your bosses, but we'll tell you all about the new app that will let all employers know and coworkers how everyone's feeling about the office. Here to talk about that story and plenty more are Jim Dahlke and Catherine Davis from Chicago Inno. Guys, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hey, John.
Hey, thanks for
having us. To be here.
I am. Yeah, you're happy. Exactly.
Yes.
Smiling
the
faces.
Happy meter is through the roof.
Well, I've teased that one ahead pretty well. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But Catherine, let's first start talking about the Chicago Venture Summit, which took place in Chicago last Thursday, right?
Yeah, last Wednesday and Thursday.
So what exactly is that for someone that has never, doesn't know what a Venture Summit is?
Yeah, so it's like a really big, tech event in Chicago. It's really a chance for investors in Chicago, but also on a national level, to get a good understanding of what the tech ecosystem looks like right now.
When you say tech ecosystem, what do you mean by that?
So I mean, like, you know, the major startups here, places like Grubhub, Outcome Health, Uptake, how much money they're making, how many employees they have, how they're growing, you know, and how Chicago is competing on a national level with other tech cities like Boston or Silicon Valley.
I imagine it's a great way for everyone to get the pulse on everyone else and how they're doing. And that's useful information. Obviously, there's some competitors within the tech industry, but I imagine it's an idea that if everyone's doing well and we all share ideas, we're all going to get better at this stuff.
Yeah, and this is the third Chicago Venture Summit that they've had over the last few years. And it's really a chance to showcase what's happening in Chicago to investors who might not really be familiar with the tech ecosystem. Here, Chicago is, for as much energy and kind of momentum that's happening here, it does kind of tend to get overlooked based on the stuff that's happening in New York, Boston, Austin, and then, of course, Silicon Valley. So really, it was a perfect time for Chicago tech to be on display because 2017 has been like kind of a remarkable year for Chicago tech. Outcome Health just raised $500 million. They're valued at $5 billion and are the 11th most valuable tech company in the U.S. right now. Uptake just raised a big round earlier this year. They are the fastest tech company to ever reach a $2 billion valuation. So there's a ton of energy and momentum happening around Chicago right now, and this Venture Summit really couldn't have come at a better time to showcase this to outside investors.
Must be nice to bounce ideas off each other and get words of advice from investors who have done really well, from companies that have done really well. And I liked one of the pieces of information. Was it someone who invested in Airbnb came up with this information,
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Ben Horowitz, he's the co-founder of venture capital firm Andreessen Horowitz in Silicon Valley. And he had this tip of advice saying that you want to invest in things that good ideas that look like bad ideas. So, you know, his example is Airbnb. He's like, yeah, we had a founder come to us, tell us he wants to rent out an air mattress to strangers. Like, how bad of an idea does that sound? But it turns out that, you know, Airbnb is like shaking up the hotel industry.
Right.
So.
Is good ideas that sound like good ideas, things that everyone wants to get on board on, you're not going to get as much bang for your buck as an investor? Or is it you're just trying to find that diamond in the rough?
Good ideas that look like good ideas are pretty obvious. Like, everybody's working on that and is aware of that. The way to make money, you know, according to Ben Horowitz, is to invest in those good ideas that nobody wants to touch because they look like terrible ideas, like
right.
Renting out your air mattress to strangers.
Exactly. How often does the Venture Summit happen in Chicago?
Once a year.
Okay.
Yeah, it's roughly 18 months. So in the last 4 years, they've done it three times to try to make it an annual event.
We'll have to wait and see what happens in 2018. Okay, let's talk about the Midwest Hyperloop, Jim. And the idea being that, I mentioned it's a train sort of system that gets you from Chicago to Columbus in about a half hour, Chicago to Columbus, or to Pittsburgh in what, an hour, under an hour?
Yes, Chicago
supposedly.
To Pittsburgh in 47 minutes. So that's the proposed plan. And so the Hyperloop is really a concept that was spearheaded by Elon Musk, and he's kind of opened it up to entrepreneurs to kind of take his idea and sort of make it a reality. And one startup that's done that is Hyperloop One. They're a Silicon Valley startup, and they've put together a global competition to solicit ideas from around the world for people to put together plans to make the Hyperloop a reality, which is basically kind of a pod-based transit system that will put you in kind of like a train pod that will take you up to 750 miles per hour.
That's crazy.
It is nuts.
The speed of sound.
It's crazy. Also, you know, probably, you know, the Wright brothers and the people thought planes were crazy too, right? So basically there were hundreds and hundreds of nominations for Hyperloop proposals from around the world. And the Midwest Plan, which is based out of Ohio in Columbus, the planning committee put that together. That gets you from Chicago to Columbus to Pittsburgh in 47 minutes. Just got a major step forward. They were selected into the top 10 globally. So Hyperloop One has got the Midwest route. It's one of their top 10 routes. They are going to continue on in the plan. So there's not any guarantee that this is going to become a reality.
Right.
But what we can say is that of the hundreds of crazy Hyperloop ideas, this is one of the best.
Well, this would be a lot of money, obviously. Does this naming in the top 10 of ideas garner them in any funding or advancement, or where do we go from here?
So funding is a big part of that, and that's going to be something that each plan has to put forth. You'd imagine that it's going to be both kind of a public and a private funding element. So that's a piece of the puzzle. Really what they're doing is trying to make sure the feasibility of this, more than who's going to pay for it. Is it work? Can it work? Can we put it in the cities that are applying for this? And so really what this says is that this Midwest plan is among the most logical possibilities.
Well, my partner just moved to Columbus, so if there's any way this could be done by the holidays, that'd be really great to go back and forth in 29 minutes to Columbus. Okay, more with Jim Dahlke and Catherine Davis, reporter and associate editor at Chicago Inno. We'll be in just a few moments. We're going to talk about that happy meter next. 708 says, yes, I'm happy. I'm a flight attendant. We're asking if you're happy with your job today. 312-981-7200, just an informal poll on the text line. And the reason we're doing that is because we're chatting with Jim Dahlke, the associated editor at Chicago Inno, and Catherine Davis, a reporter at Chicago Inno. And Catherine, you've been with Chicago Inno now for a month and a half. Are you happy?
I am happy.
Are you just saying that because your coworker's here?
No.
It's not so anonymous now, but with Happy Meters, that's something that is a new app that's being created out here in Chicago, right?
Mm-hmm.
Soon employers will really have a pulse on what's happening in their offices.
Yeah. So Click Studios is a Chicago-based web design and development firm, and they were curious as to how their employees were feeling about their day-to-day responsibilities. And so they launched Happy Meter, which is like an internal email-based engagement tool where, you know, the managers can write their own questions, like, how are you feeling about your workload? How are you feeling about your relationship with your boss? And employees can rate it or just respond anonymously if they want to about how they're feeling.
And can you see, so bosses can't see specifically who is saying what unless the user is okay with that. As a coworker, can I see how the rest of my coworkers are feeling?
Yeah, you cannot see individual coworkers' response, but you can see like general data on how everyone's feeling.
See, I just think it's going to go up through the week, Monday through Friday. But I guess there's some really important information in that data.
Well, imagine if you had this data for a year or 2 years or 5 years, and you can kind of see year over year how your employee satisfaction is, and then you can implement new strategies to make the workplace a better environment, right? So say everybody's employee morale kind of dips in the cold months. Maybe you plan a trip to Austin at that time of the year, right? You can kind of really know day by day how your office is feeling. And, you know, with the, I imagine a lot of tech companies are going to use this with the competitiveness that's going on in Chicago Tech right now. The hiring is fierce. Everybody wants to have an office place that is attractive for tech workers and for high skilled roles. Keeping your office happy is incredibly important. And knowing that day to day is really valuable data.
I was a little concerned that it would be a pricey thing to try and get with this new software or this new app or how it would be done. But really for employers, it seems like at least a very cheap option to me.
Yeah, it's only $5 a month per user.
Mm-hmm.
So
it'd be really advantageous for people with smaller businesses as well to be able to take care of that. I guess, yeah, like you said, they could take that information and go. My only question is, whatever happened to the days where we just told our boss how we felt? But I guess the anonymity gives people a really more realistic look at how people feel.
Exactly, and especially with bigger companies. I mean, if you have a 200 or 300-person company, I mean, talking to the boss every day maybe you don't run into the boss every
right.
day, right? So, I mean, this is a very quick way to just in your email inbox say, here's how I'm feeling today. It's a very low effort thing to do, but a really valuable piece of information to be sharing with your employer.
It's interesting because I'm looking at the happy meter right now, or how it looks in your email. It's almost like Facebook with the five emojis. Mm-hmm. You can just kind of go down the line. They should provide more than just smileys and frownies, though, like a, you know, like a laughing one, or if they're really angry, you know, a big old orange face. I don't know, something like that. That's why I should get into the tech business. Okay, Future Founders, it has a new program out, right, Catherine? And this is aimed at providing more opportunities for entrepreneurship for minority and millennial and women in the workforce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Future Founders, if you're not familiar, it's a youth startup accelerator based out of 1871. They're known for their work with children and teens, but now they're expanding with this new program called the Chicago Cohort. And it's aimed for people aged 18 to 30 from underrepresented groups. So that's racial minorities, women, veterans, immigrants, a lot of different people. And Future Founders wants to help these people get immersed into the Chicago tech scene. So give them the resources, you know, whether that's funding or introducing them to major players, giving them a space to work.
And what's the advantage? I mean, obviously, I think that the more diverse, and they would probably say, the more diverse we have in terms of how many entrepreneurs there are out there, the more jobs are going to be created in the long run for this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Somewhere in the millions. I think I saw it was like over 9 million jobs if they felt that more minority and women were entrepreneurs.
And it's no secret the reality of the tech industry today. I mean, you can read pretty much any publication from Recode to TechCrunch, and you can kind of gauge what's happening in the tech industry. It's not a very inclusive environment for people of color and for women. And I think especially in Chicago, we're seeing that the city and the people who are working here really want to kind of turn that narrative upside down. There are a lot of organizations that are working really hard to make Chicago more inclusive. Wisdom is a program out of 1871 that's doing a lot around female entrepreneurs. Blue 1647 is doing a lot to help people of color get into the tech industry and put those people into high growth tech jobs. So Chicago is working really hard. It's still has a long way to go, but there's a lot of energy and momentum in the city right now to make it an inclusive tech environment.
I think a lot of people have recognized the importance of diversity in the workplace and the huge value that that provides, giving a company all the knowledge they can on all sorts of different people to help them reach different consumers. But zooming out from an innovation industry, I think it's like we talked about the summit earlier. It'd be wonderful if we had complete diversity, though. So when we exchange ideas, everyone's coming from a different background.
And the nice thing about the Chicago Venture Summit is they did spotlights on startups. I think there was like 9 or 10. They were all female-founded startups, and every panel had at least one person of color or one woman on it. So really, Chicago's diversity was on display last week.
And this program has been going on. They had a class graduate in 2015, and there's some really cool stats about them. They say that already 92% of this class of 25 people are running their own businesses, which really creates a lot of jobs.
Yeah, and their combined revenues last year were $3.4 million.
Wow. So that's really good stuff. Jim Dahlke, Catherine Davis, guys, thanks so much for coming. Where can people find more information?
They can check us out at chicagono.com, and there you can sign up for our daily newsletter, The Beat.
Oh, all right. I'll be doing that right now. Okay, plenty more coming up on the Winter's Business Lunch after this. Certainly the headlines over the past few weeks, and rightfully so, have been dominated by discussions of Hurricane Harvey, Hurricane Irma, Hurricane Jose, now Hurricane Maria, a Category 3 hurricane as it makes its way towards the Leeward Islands and Puerto Rico and perhaps again into the United States area. Obviously, we'll keep you posted on all of that. But certainly, we'd be remiss not to talk about the business side of things, not from a cruel perspective, but from the fact that so many jobs have been wiped away, especially in Florida and the Caribbean, by the effects of these hurricanes. And rebuilding is such an important part to these tourism industries. And to chat about that, we have the Assistant Professor of Hospitality and Tourism Management over at Northern Illinois University in DeKalb, Professor Nicholas Riehorchak. Thanks for joining us, Professor.
Hi, John. It's great to be on.
How close did I get on your last name, man?
It was really good. You know, my students call me Dr. Nick, but Nick is good for the radio.
Dr. Nick works just fine. And congratulations on your big win over Nebraska this weekend.
I appreciate it. Yeah, go Huskies.
So let's talk about this, switching gears, obviously, to this really incredible amount of powerful hurricanes we've had in the Caribbean so far this season. And we're only at the peak of it right now with Hurricane Maria kind of eyeing the islands as well. Is there any way, I mean, I'm sure you'll be able to break this down for us, but trying to put in perspective, how big of an industry is tourism to Florida, to the Caribbean islands? I mean, is it even possible to wrap our brains around how big this is for these areas?
Yeah, that's a great question. So if we look at the tourism industry, let's say globally, it's about 1 in 10 jobs on the planet.
Wow.
And important to note, yeah, that the industry, kind of the sector, continues to outpace that of the global economy, per se. And those numbers we see are even higher in Florida and the Caribbean. So, for example, in the Caribbean, you're looking at about 50% of the GDP from tourism from many of these places.
And that's interesting because obviously Florida is one of the top tourism destinations in the world, and it's huge for them, but they have exports. They have other things that they're able to make money on. They have industry there. They have different areas as well. I guess they're a little bit more insulated than these Caribbean islands who really have taken quite a toll from these hurricanes.
Absolutely, yeah. Like you mentioned, Florida really is the fourth largest economy in the U.S. Tourism is at the forefront of that, but they do have other industry, agriculture primarily. But when we look at the Caribbean, it's going to be much more difficult for them to recover.
And how do they even start going about that? I mean, I've been lucky enough to go on cruises before on Royal Caribbean, and you stop on these islands for a few hours and you see how big and important tourism is for these islands. But there's sometimes not a lot of infrastructure on these islands. You go beyond the touristy areas and you see, unfortunately, a lot of poverty in these areas. How are these islands equipped? And I guess it kind of depends on each one, equipped at rebuilding quickly, because I imagine speed is so important for them.
Speed is going to be important, and unfortunately it's going to take them a bit. And many of these islands, which are legacies of European empires, if you will, I think will look to the central governments for funds. So let's say namely Great Britain and France, for example.
How about Florida? When you talk about that people spent $109 billion in Florida last year, I imagine that as opposed to the Caribbean islands, they're able to recover a little bit quicker because they have obviously the support of the federal government helping them out. But I mean, they're in for some trouble as well in moving forward.
Absolutely. They're looking at it because when we think about one way to measure this, we're going to be looking at hotels. And the reason this is going to be difficult is that we might not think about that. A lot of the evacuees are going to be staying in the hotels, which makes it difficult to measure. And once those evacuees leave the hotels, which are now at capacity, they will be filled with kind of response efforts, be it from FEMA, insurance adjusters, and other folks who are coming in, construction teams, for example. So it's difficult and a bit early to kind of estimate what those losses will be.
You mentioned hotels and obviously the airline industry. But, I mean, this stuff really trickles down to a lot of people with these jobs. What other sorts of jobs are as part of the tourism industry are being affected or will be affected?
Yeah, it's a very interdisciplinary industry. So if we look at Orlando, for example, we had Disney World shut down for just the sixth time in history, and they employ around 70,000 people. And so we know how many people visit. It's about 20 million visitors just last year. But we think about some of the other businesses, like you mentioned, around some of the smaller local restaurants. So it's important to encourage people to still travel if they're able to, because Disneyland can take the hit much more so than some of these smaller local businesses.
Are there examples in the past of islands that have recovered very quickly from devastating storms, or unfortunately, examples of islands that have simply that have taken decades or have never really recovered?
Sure. What's great is that there's a great spirit of the Caribbean people, right? People travel not only for the weather, but for their spirit of hospitality. Hugo, we could say, in 89 was one of the worst that we've seen come through the Caribbean. And we're happy to report that the recoveries did occur, and were rather quick.
That is good news. You mentioned these jobs. My friends, I have some friends that are getting married in Anguilla, or they were supposed to in November. Their wedding's been canceled now, and they're going to have to find another place, which obviously pales in comparison to the struggle that the people on the island are going through. But, it trickles down in so much more than just people that are stopping by on a cruise or just flying in for a week. You're talking about food services. You're talking about janitorial jobs. I mean, everyone on these islands seems to be contributing towards this tourism economy.
Absolutely. Like I mentioned before, it's roughly 50% for the GDP for many of these places. Barbuda, for example, which was incredibly hit by this hurricane, everybody was evacuated. And another thing that's really interesting to point out is that many of the tourists that are coming to these islands are actually coming from Florida. So we will anticipate those numbers come down as they're dealing with Irma themselves.
If there's a blueprint for success for these islands, what is it? Is it a matter of trying to secure funding quickly? Is it a matter of, rolling up your sleeves and getting right to work as quick as you can, fixing the roads and the airports first? What's the blueprint for an island with a smaller economy to try and recover quickly?
Sure. I think speed is important. So we'll rely on some of the cruise lines to come in and bring passengers in to kind of get this economy rolling again.
Mm-hmm.
And when we...
Go ahead.
And when we look again at places like Barbuda, we see some of the countries working together. So perhaps if you were going to Barbuda, you can go to neighboring Antigua, for example.
And I imagine it's, you know, you kind of touched on this, that a lot of us who have had a chance to enjoy these islands, if you have enjoyed these islands, find a way, even if there's some areas of the island that are still under construction, to still support the islands, I guess, that you love. I think that they rely on people that, and you know, when you, like you mentioned, the spirit of the Caribbean, when you go down to these islands, if you've been lucky enough to, how welcoming they are to you. Obviously, you're helping pay their jobs and all those sorts of things, but they really are a wonderful people that welcome you there to, in these tough times, find the way, if you can, to continue to give them your business.
I agree, and that's a great point, John. Perception here is really a big issue, right? We want to make sure that people that are able to travel to places that weren't as affected can still travel there and help out these economies, which really rely on tourism.
Professor Nicholas Riehorchek, or Dr. Nick, as we call him here on the radio, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate your time.
It was my pleasure. Thank you, John.
Plenty more coming up on the Winter's Business Lunch, including we're going to talk about how you will be able to pay for rent, or at least how some people are being able to pay for rent without issuing a single dime to their landlord. That and more coming up here on the Winter's Business Lunch. Wintrust Business Lunch, joined by Randy Schaefer, digital news editor for Chicago Tribune. Randy, good to see you again.
Good to see you, too.
Everything going well?
It is, yeah.
We got some fun stories to chat about today. I've been teasing this one about how you could negotiate your rent down or even maybe live rent-free. This has happened in New York City, so people are wondering, how the heck does someone get to do that?
Well, that's what I want to know, because I would love to not have a rent payment. So this story in the New York Post says that, by Zachary Cousin, says that social media stars are trading posts for apartments.
Okay.
So basically, if you have a lot of followers on Instagram and you are willing to open up your life to the internet, post photos of your hopefully clean apartment, you could get a pretty big sizable discount on your rent or even live rent free.
How many followers are we talking here?
So some of the people in the story, one had 63,000, another had 557,000.
Wow.
So that free rent comes at a... I guess it's not easy. It's not easy to get.
So my 2,000 ain't going to cut it yet.
I don't think so.
Everyone go to John the Cubs fan, J-O-N, the Cubs fan. That is my Instagram and my Twitter. I would love to live rent-free, and I'll follow you too, so you can go on that journey. I imagine it's a matter of, if they've got a new gorgeous building with a great view and they want to attract new people to come to it, it's about posting a picture of you on the computer with the Brooklyn Bridge behind you, or
right,
something like
and
that.
You've got to have pretty good interior decorating skills, because I imagine not a lot of people would want to see, if you're still sleeping on a mattress on your floor, or, you know, you haven't done laundry in a few months. I imagine a lot of people wouldn't really want to see that.
Is there any idea how many people are actually doing this?
You know, I don't know. This story talked to a few of them, so I imagine...
It's happening.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now I guess every time I see somebody posting about their apartment, I'm going to check and see if they've tagged their leasing office in it and... Yeah. See if they're getting by rent-free.
Okay, so let's move gears to people that love to go out into the wilderness. It's certainly on the rise. People love visiting the national parks, and why wouldn't they? But is social media, are millennials ruining that experience for camping and outdoor activities?
Well, I'm under the impression that millennials ruin everything.
Right.
That's what I've been told.
Of course we do, for sure.
So this story for the Tahoe Daily Tribune says, it raises the question, is social media ruining Lake Tahoe's wilderness? And what it argues is that due to the prevalence of geotagging and hashtags and these beautiful canyon views and sunset photos, more and more people are traveling just to get those social media shares, which is kind of depleting Mother Nature's resources.
Just because more people are going?
More people are going, more people aren't really adhering to the rules. You know, people will go off the beaten path to try to get that perfect angle. Or
really?
Yet the story actually, it mentioned somebody was starting a campfire in a no campfire zone and was actually risking a forest fire just to get that perfect shot.
That's incredible. It doesn't surprise me, though, based on seeing my friends' feeds and what they're doing.
No, it doesn't. And the ironic part, too, is... You know, you're breaking the rules and you've got all these photos to for evidence.
Right.
So
that's really
maybe
true.
Not the smartest idea in the long term.
I was really lucky. I got to go to Iceland a couple weeks ago, and they don't have many signs posted. They don't have many fences up or ropes up, but they just say, please stay where you're supposed to stay. The photos will be good enough where you are. And I imagine that's part of it, is that they're just saying that they're trying to combat that. They say it on the plane before you land. Like,
oh,
they
I
want people
it.
To know it.
Yeah, yeah. And I know we were talking about this the last time we talked with Iceland's social media focused tourism strategy. So I imagine It's pretty big over there, too.
And recreational visits really are on the rise in some of these parks.
They are, yeah.
All right, well, that's a good thing. I guess that's the good thing, but now millennials need to figure a way not to ruin everything. Okay, silent films, of course, a bygone era, but not so much anymore. In fact, when we watch films or movies or videos on our Facebook feeds, we're usually watching them with no sound.
We are, yeah. And so Amanda Hess wrote this story for the New York Times about these silent film returns on social media. And I don't know about you, but I very rarely ever watch videos on social media with sound. I always keep my phone on silent. I know from the Tribune standpoint, 80-something percent of our videos are viewed without sound. So we always have to use closed captions or embedded text because people just don't flip it on.
I work over at the U on TV, and I post these videos all the time of me doing something goofy on the morning show. And that's absolutely true, the idea that, you know, I don't care what I'm saying. Most people aren't going to actually hear it. I know captioning has become a big part of Facebook. Have you dug into that at all? Because it is not the easiest thing in the world to do.
No, it's not. Creating those closed captions, the SRT files, is a complete pain, but it's something you have to do. And not only that, but I actually like it. It's very disability friendly as well. So there is a silver lining to the silent film returning.
That's true. Now, are businesses, media outlets, are they going to start changing the way they, now that they are armed with this data, changing the ways that they present some stories digitally?
I think so. And you can kind of see it. That's why those stop motion food videos are so popular. You don't need any words at all, any talking. It's just really quick and snappy and fun, and there's maybe some music playing in the background that, you know, 85% of people won't even hear. But I think it's definitely changing how we share things online.
Absolutely. Well, most people are at work. They're not supposed to be listening to the videos. Okay, Instagram has made some changes, or they're going to be making some changes for some users, and it's really peeving some people off.
This is. So a lot of people are very particular about their Instagram grids. I know I'm one of them. I like to keep mine looking very, very pretty.
When you say grid, what does that mean? Is that like when you look at someone's profile and you get a snapshot of all the pictures they've taken?
Yeah, so the little rows of three photos. So Refinery29 is reporting that a few users are seeing the switch. So instead of having a 3x3x3, users are seeing a 4x4x4.
And is this because we just have bigger screens now?
I'm assuming so. I don't know what other reason there would be to change it. You know, are the iPhone 10, iPhone X,
whatever it is,
2017, whatever, is a lot bigger than, you know, my old iPhone 4.
Mm-hmm.
So it does make sense, but it's throwing this off for a lot of people who will color coordinate their photos, maybe.
Well, that's what I was wondering. I didn't know that that was even a thing, that people then try and make. So when you see an individual photo on Instagram, obviously you want that to be pretty, whether you're at a campfire or wherever you are.
Right.
But people want to make their aggregate when you look at all of their photos. They want to.
Everyone could see your hand motions.
Yeah, sorry,
right,
I'm trying
now
to do this. So people actually arrange photos in a way that makes that look cohesive and pretty?
Yeah, so for example, when Taylor Swift was preparing to launch her Reputation promotion, she posted three videos in a row, and together they formed a snake when you looked at them on her feed.
That's
all in
so
one
cool.
In one image.
And if it's four now, it messes all
it throws
of them.
Everything off.
Oh,
years and years of this.
Are they for sure going to be doing this, or is this just they're just testing it out?
They're just testing it. I haven't seen any official confirmation. But.
And I'm Randy, by the way, we can't get to the last story because there's no time, but I can't believe your Instagram verified. I need to find out how to do it.
I did not pay for it.
People pay thousands of dollars for that.
They do.
We'll have to have other people dig into it.
Steve talk about it next
Yeah, have Steve talk about it next time or tweet it out. Thank you so much for joining us, Randy. Really appreciate it.
Anytime.